Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.
Big money for big problems. Hello again, I'm Armin Alney, and this is Which Way LA, KCRW's ongoing series on the issues Southern Californians care about. Was Hurricane Katrina a wake-up call for California? Tonight we'll look at Prop 1E, a $4.1 billion bond issue to protect the state from devastation by water. It's the last of a four-measure bond package that would increase state debt by $37 billion. Can California afford to pass it all? Can it afford not to? We'll hear a debate. Also tonight, a congressional candidate in Orange County under investigation for allegedly warning Latinos to stay away from the polls. First, here's the news. We're not only back with Which Way LA on KCRW. Proposition 1E would raise money to rebuild levees in California. With three other measures, it would increase state debt by $37 billion. Tonight we'll look at 1E, and then we'll hear a debate on the whole package. First, this story. A Republican candidate for Congress in Orange County says he was not the one who mailed a letter saying, in Spanish, it's illegal to vote in a federal election if you're an immigrant. In fact, naturalized immigrants are allowed to vote. The irony is that Tan D. Nguyen, who's challenging Democrat Loretta Sanchez, is himself a naturalized citizen, native of Vietnam. Norberto Santana broke the story for the Orange County Register. Norberto, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Warren.
How many of these letters were sent out?
It looks to be about 14,000 at this point throughout Central Orange County.
And if Mr. Nguyen says he didn't do it, who does he say did?
Early today, we had on our blog Total Buzz that he had issued a statement saying that it was a campaign worker who had, without his consent, authorized a campaign database to be used for that purpose. However, just a few minutes after he made that statement, the county's GOP chairman strongly refuted that, saying that state investigators had told him that Nguyen was personally involved in sending those mailers out.
Now, the state investigators are looking into this from the Attorney General's office. So there's been a request by Loretta Sanchez for a federal investigation. What are the possible penalties if, in fact, they can figure out who actually did this?
Well, at this point, it's almost more of a challenge to track all the different investigations. The Secretary of State has become involved. The state attorney general has become involved. Ironically, some of the laws that Nguyen might be prosecuted under were adopted after a highly publicized event here in Orange County in 1988 with a local GOP hired uniformed security guards to stand watch over polling stations. My information so far is that he could be charged under a penalty under those laws that seek to prevent people from intimidating voters from exercising their franchise.
Given that history, what are the Republicans in Orange County, the other Republicans in Orange County, saying about this?
They are scrambling quickly to denounce Nguyen and the message that that mailer sent out. Again, the GOP chairman has been all over the blogs and talking to the newspapers, strongly denouncing the effort and also calling on Nguyen to withdraw from the race.
Now, Mr. Nguyen himself is a former Democrat, and he's a businessman in Orange County, pretty much funding the campaign on his own. It's not considered a winner. Loretta Sanchez is in a gerrymandered district, pretty favorable to her. Have you talked to him about why he wants to spend so much money on what appears to be a losing cause?
Well, at this point, Nguyen hasn't exactly been talking to anybody. My information is that today, in fact, after investigators from the state were looking for him all day long, he's going to be talking to them today. He is scheduling a press conference for tomorrow. At this point, he's been like many other wealthy candidates who have decided to cast their lot into the world of electoral politics. Obviously, for Mr. Nguyen, it's turning out very differently than he might have expected early on.
All right. We'll find out what he says tomorrow, see how these investigations pan out, and whether, in fact, he does remain a candidate for the Congress in Orange County. Norberto Santana, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, Warren, for having me.
Investigative reporter with the Orange County Register. I'll be right back with Which Way LA.
For more information about Which Way LA or to podcast this program, visit kcrw.com and click on KCRW A to Z. CD copies are also available. Call 1-800-600-KCRW.
Norman Olney back with Which Way LA. Proposition 1E would raise $4.1 billion in bond money to prevent a disaster of the kind that Hurricane Katrina brought to New Orleans. Prop 1E was proposed by Governor Schwarzenegger and put on the ballot by the Democratic-controlled legislature. Matt Weiser writes for the Sacramento Bee. Matt, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
What would this bond money go for?
Well, it would... The vast majority of the money would pay for flood control improvements in California's Central Valley, which is a source of water for most of the state, including L.A. and San Diego.
So flood control there, how does the flood control in the Central Valley relate to the water supply?
Well, over time, the delta formed by the confluence of the Sacramento and San Joaquin Rivers has become a conduit for water, snowmelt that comes out of the Sierra Nevada, and that water is pumped to Southern California. The problem is that if levees in the delta failed, seawater would be drawn in from San Francisco Bay and the ocean, which would contaminate that water supply, and the pumps that send water south would have to be shut down, which would eliminate at least temporarily a large supply of Southern California's water.
If the levees failed, what would it mean for people who live in the Central Valley and people who try to grow crops there?
Well, it would probably mean the temporary shutdown of the water supply serving about 7 million acres of farmland in the Central Valley. It would put railroads and highways and other utilities underwater for months, perhaps, depending on how many levees failed and where. It would probably flood many homes and businesses and be a substantial hit to the economy, not just for the valley, but statewide.
All right. So we're talking about a potential disaster in California. How likely is it to happen?
Well, because of a combination of factors, some studies have shown that it could be quite likely. The levees in the delta are old and quite fragile. They're built on peat soils, which are slowly decomposing over time, which increases the force against the levees from the water around them. And those soils are also liquefiable. So studies have shown that an earthquake could cause multiple levee failures. In fact, something like a 60% chance of multiple levee failures from an earthquake by the middle of this century.
All right. Proposition 1E, we're talking incidentally with Matt Weiser, reporter for the Sacramento Bee. Proposition 1E would raise $4.1 billion in bond money to fix that. I've seen estimates as high as $12 billion for actually doing the whole job. Where do they come from?
Well, that $12 billion figure, I think, is the upper range of estimates that the State Department of Water Resources has come up with. They oversee flood control in the Central Valley, and the $12 billion includes significant modifications as yet undetermined to fix these levee problems permanently in the Delta through some kind of reengineering of the levee structure and water conveyance. All that's being figured out in several major studies that are going on now. So this bond measure would only take care of a part of the problem, and more money would have to be raised later. But the state says that this $4 billion is crucial to get the job started.
Now, there are some who are saying there are not enough things in this measure, that we need more reservoirs, the water treatment plants, and other things as well. Is there any plan to go after those kinds of projects as well?
Well, there's an agency called CalFed that is working on several new reservoir projects. There's a number of studies underway to figure out which of those would be best. At the same time, the state and water agencies throughout California are working on other ways to increase the state's water supply through things like groundwater recharge and recycling, desalination. Prop 1E, though, is pretty finely targeted towards flood control. There's another measure on the ballot, Prop 84, that deals with some flood control issues and also some water supply issues to address the water needs question.
Okay, back to 1E, because it's been given so much attention, and it's so big, $4.1 billion, so much attention by the governor and by the legislature. Is there any disagreement that the levees do, in fact, need repair? Is most of the dispute about whether this is the right way to fix them?
No, there's almost no disagreement that the levees are in bad shape. Where the disagreement is basically whether a big bond measure like this is the way to pay for it. There's really not a well-organized or well-funded opposition to this bond measure, but the critics say that the levy should be fixed through local assessments or simply by tapping the state's general fund revenue growth rather than burdening the state with more borrowing like bond measures might do.
All right. Well, Matt Weiser with the Sacramento Bee, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you.
Here's the rundown. Prop 1E, again, we've just been talking about, is part of a four-part package of bonds. And here are the others. We've talked about them before on our program. Prop 1B would raise $20 billion for transportation. Prop 1C would mean $2.9 billion for housing. Prop 1D raises another $10.4 billion for education. And as we just heard, Prop 1E is $4.1 billion for flood protection. You don't have to remember all those numbers. All told, it adds up to $37 billion in new debt, plus roughly that much in interest over the years. That's the largest bond package in state history, and both parties, once again, call it the positive result of bipartisan cooperation. Mark Watts is technical advisor to the Let's Rebuild California campaign. Welcome to our program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
What's the theory here? Why do we have to have all of these bonds raised all at the same time on the November ballot?
Well, the theory is in the categories you just listed, we've had a lack of investment at the appropriate pace to meet our future needs. And bonds allow you to, at one point in time, accelerate the investment that allows you to catch up and start moving forward.
What do you mean by accelerate the investment?
Accelerate the construction of the facilities that are needed.
I see. Why is bonding better? We just heard Matt Weiser say some people think that paying the money out of the general fund would be a better way to do it.
Well, the general fund is fine for that. There have been attempts in the past to earmark, for example, the growth in the general fund. Frankly, when you use GO bonds, you are relying on the general fund. It just allows you to pay for it over a longer period of time.
So, in other words, the money to pay the interest over the years comes out of the general fund?
Correct.
How long will it take to pay off this $37 billion?
Well, typically the bonds, once they're sold, are 20 to 30-year bonds, depending on the placement in the market.
And is there any effort that's been made to say how much this is going to cost a given family in California, or is it just too difficult to make that kind of calculation?
I've not done that.
Okay. Why is it that the infrastructure has, as you indicated, been neglected for so long?
Well, let me just use the transportation bond as an example. What we found there is we have an excise tax, and in the early part of this decade, we added the sales tax on gas to fund transportation improvements. But historically, we've seen the actual excise tax, the amount you pay at the pump, dwindle in its buying power because the demand on the road system is growing, as we all know. But conversely, the fuel efficiency of vehicles is producing less and less excise tax in conjunction with that growth in demand. So it's just not been able to stay apace.
And I know you're a specialist in transportation, but we also have on here housing, education, flood protection, as we just heard. Have all of those things been neglected in sort of a proportional way?
I believe so, and I think if you just harken back a few years, we had a severe budget crisis, and the political leadership here in Sacramento chose to slow down investment in capital projects to keep the operating fund moving forward.
Okay. Again, Mark Watts is a technical advisor to the Let's Rebuild California campaign in favor of this package. Once again, there are five measures in the package, but 1A doesn't actually raise any money. All the others are massive bond issues, as we have discussed. John Kupal is president of the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association. That's a watchdog organization, been very active in this state for a long, long time. John Kupal, good to have you back on our program.
Pleasure to be here.
You have, as voters will have to do as well, picked and chosen your way through these measures, and you're not in favor of all of them. Let's ask which ones you are in favor of and why.
Well, first of all, we do actively oppose. I won't say active. We just have a position of opposition to the housing and the education bonds for different reasons on those. We are neutral on the transportation bond and the levy bonds. And I would agree with Mark. I mean, I think there's quite a bit of agreement here, and that is it's good that the governor and the legislature are finally focusing on infrastructure. I don't think there's a lot of debate about the infrastructure needs of the state of California. And I'm certainly not going to suggest that what is being proposed is anything but a good faith effort to try to address that. However, we were hopeful for a lot more reforms in terms of how we address infrastructure needs. During the original dot-com boom, when there was billions of dollars of additional revenue that was immediately plowed into ongoing government programs. That was precisely the time when the Republicans' 2020 plan, a plan of taking an increasing slice of the growth in the general fund, in other words, not taking any money out of existing programs, but just taking a percentage of the growth in the general fund and dedicating that to a pay-as-you-go method of financing infrastructure was a very positive step. Unfortunately, our political leadership at that time took all that excess revenues and did not spend it on infrastructure. Infrastructure has frequently had a very poor constituency. It's not like public employee unions and other interest groups few people accept. As has been acknowledged, the people who actually build the roads have a huge constituency for more spending. So it is difficult come budget time to get a slice of the general fund for infrastructure.
Okay, let me interrupt you if I may. What you're talking about is history. What we have now is infrastructure that is badly deteriorated by your own observation. What better way would there be than this to fix it?
I do believe that that bond financing is probably part of an overall mix. In other words, the needs are so great, I don't see how we get out of it without at least contemplating some amount of debt financing. However, to proceed without any pay-as-you-go element when we have additional revenues, I think is a mistake. I think we need to start doing what Pat Brown did, and who at one time was spending 6 or 7% of the general fund on a pay-as-you-go basis. Because remember, when we use bond financing, we lose 50 cents of every dollar right out of the box. 50 cents out of every dollar will go for the interest payments and the bond council and the bond underwriters and everybody associated with the public finance arena. And then, believe me, there's big money in that. Again, we're not saying it's always inappropriate, but let's at least acknowledge that we lose money out of the box right away when we go into debt.
John Kupal of the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association. Back to Mark Watts with the Let's Build Re-California, Rebuild California campaign. Now, John Kupal says he's neutral. His organization's neutral on transportation and flood control, but they want to vote no, want people to vote no on housing and education. Now, can you make an argument for bonding those kinds of things, which aren't infrastructure in the same sense that roads and highways and ports and levees are?
Well, I do know that in Prop 1C, which is the housing bond, there are funds available to help working families acquire houses, which in turn stimulates the economy. It's a potpourri of program components, so it's really hard to go through them all. But I do think there are some very important elements of the housing bond that would be viewed beneficially overall. On the education side, I think we all know that the schools and local school districts have the ability to partially fund some of the schools that they need, and development pays for probably their fair share or more of expanded communities. And what the school bonds would do is provide the state investment to help round out the local match. So I think if you look at it as holistically, I think they're both very important pieces of the overall plan. It's a comprehensive plan that we have to rebuild California. and I think they're just very important parts.
And John Kupal, also the University of California, the state universities are involved in that. They say they are, with the increased enrollment, they're going to need more facilities. Why aren't those, isn't bonding a good way to pay for that?
Well, first of all, I agree with Mark that looking at this holistically, you know, look at the entire package. The whole package is a lot of debt, you know, close to $40 billion. So I think it is appropriate for voters to start picking and choosing. And one of the reasons we went neutral on transportation and levy is because those have a certain immediate public safety element to them that we didn't see in housing and education. Quite frankly, with education, we've never seen the kinds of reforms we think are necessary. You know, I'm calling Warren from Sacramento, but you well know the problems the LA Unified School District has had with the abject lack of accountability and the way they've used both local and state bond proceeds, Belmont High School being Exhibit A in that argument. And unfortunately, these bond proposals don't come with the kinds of reforms, the kinds of oversight, the kinds of teeth that's needed in auditing and, quite frankly, penalties for misuse and fraud that we would like to see in order to get taxpayer support for those. I hate to put Mark in the Hobson's choice of defending the entire bond proposal, because I certainly do think there are things in the transportation bond and the levy bond that are well worth it. But again, I think voters are going to have to start making an individual decision and prioritizing how much debt we're going to take. And again, I would remind everybody that the bond debt is only one form of debt that California taxpayers are facing. We have the extraordinary unfunded liability in public employee pensions.
Okay, we need to focus on what's on the ballot here. Now, I want to be neutral here. I will certainly stipulate that there are arguments about the LAUSD and whether or not reform, oversight, and accountability are in fact present there. Quickly, Mark Watts, why not more oversight, demands for accountability, reform of the process in these bond measures?
Well, frankly, once these bonds are approved by the voters, then the actual expenditures and the appropriations are going to be done by the legislature. But they're going to be done in strict conformance with the outline that the voters approved. So you have a check and balance. You do have the legislative budget subcommittees and a requirement for the budget to be passed by a two-thirds vote. So if something is not going according to Hoyle, you've got every bit of ability to hold that up in the budget annual budget debate. So I do think there are built-in protections, and the pace of expenditure is going to be moderated, or not moderated, but determined by the legislature and the governor after the approval of the bonds.
As we always say on these programs, all we can do is present the headlines. It's very important for voters to look at the voter pamphlet, to study the arguments of both sides, and all sides, I should say, in this instance. Thank you both very much for being with us. Mark Watts with Let's Rebuild California, and John Kupal with the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association.
Thanks, Warren. Thank you.
Which Way LA, produced tonight by Dan Konecki and Katie Cooper, technical director Phoebe Zimmerman. I'm Warren Olney. Join us again for Which Way LA on 89.9 KCRW.
Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.